It's game week. We got a lot to talk about, so let's dive in.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the boog, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir. We're back. Happy Sunday. Happy game week. It's finally here. The long wait is over, and we are ready to talk some Auburn dadgum game week football and everything that's going along with it. Happy game week, guys. Let's jump on in. Let's get this thing going. Just like we always do, we're going to have a little bit of an itinerary, some things I want to talk about, some things I want to kind of some points I want to hit, and then we'll open up the questions after that. If you want to make sure that your question gets read, they're going to start filling up pretty quick. Hit the super chat. That'll definitely get you locked in. And we appreciate it. That's how we keep this thing going. So let's go ahead and kick it off. Nate Marshall started off the weekend. If you listen to the Friday show, kind of hinted at it that it could be coming. And obviously shortly thereafter it did. He went ahead and flipped. Kind of came out of the blue. I think the only smoke that had started building up with this one was just basically like the week prior. Some people had started talking about it, and I honestly wasn't really sure if I believed it or not. Started hearing, so hey, this guy is, they're making a move for Nate Marshall, and I think they're going to get him. And I got to be honest, I didn't let the boog. I kind of let the boog not get to the level it needed to be, and I wasn't ready to buy in to think that they could possibly flip it, especially this soon. But they did. The heat got super loud on Thursday night, and then obviously Friday morning he had the graphic ready to go. He went ahead and flipped, really kicked the weekend off with a bang. And boy, man, this defensive line class just keeps getting more and more attractive, more and more elite. And the addition of Nate Marshall gives you something. He gives you a level of something that even all the other guys, I think something different from every single one of the other guys. That's another thing I like about it, is there's levels to this defensive line class. There's guys that are all good at different things. Well, Nate's really good at everything, okay? Nate Marshall, I talked about it a little bit on his high school team. He plays 50-50 jump ball tight end, which you know I love. And then he plays every position across the defensive line. So it's something that is that versatility. I tried to think of somebody all weekend, somebody you could compare him to. And I was having a hard time because there's just not that many guys at 6'4", 265 pounds that have the athleticism that this guy has the, I guess, abilities to play multiple spots and play both sides of the ball like this guy has. So I think the biggest comparison, and it's so funny, I was watching SEC Rewind over the weekend, and it was 1998, Tennessee versus Florida, the year Tennessee wins the national championship. And it was a really close game. And you notice Florida's defense, they had this guy running around that they called the freak. And that was Javon Curse. And I looked up his measurables, 6'4", 265. And he played linebacker, hand down, hand in the dirt, up, running around, in coverage. He played a little bit of everything. That kind of triggered. That's kind of who I feel like this Nate Marshall kid could possibly emulate. I think he could be a little bit of that type of player. I think he could play around 270, 275 pounds and stand up, come off the edge, slide down, not have to have sub packages. I just think this is a massive, massive addition. This is a huge, huge feather in the cap for Vontrell King Williams. This is the same town, you know, Chicago, Illinois. That's where he's from. I know he wanted to snag one from his hometown. I know he wanted to plant an Auburn flag in an area that we typically don't get kids from. And he never gave up. That's the thing about the staff, man. Whenever kids even commit elsewhere, if they want the kid, they don't give up. It is continual conversation, continual contact over and over every single day. And it pays off. It pays off. Auburn's already got four flips already this year. So they've flipped four guys. And I think there's going to be at least three to four more. Obviously, you got Deuce on the table. You got Naeem Offord. that Hugh put guarantees on that they're still talking to every single day. There's just several guys left that I think you're going to end up with at least, you know, three to four more flips as this thing goes on. You cannot count anybody out with this staff. I'm sure it didn't hurt with all the Michigan allegations and things that are going down. They got their notice of allegations, which is typically, hey, this is what we got you on. This is what we got the goods on you on. So you guys can either decide your own punishment or you're going to get your punishment from us very soon. I don't know how significant the sign stealing actually could be. It seems pretty serious. It seems pretty like it was a pretty high level. You had like espionage. You had spies go into other games and things like that. So I feel like this could possibly be a pretty serious penalty coming, and I'm sure that's being harped on. I'm sure that they let Nate know that over and over and over again. Hey, the bad news is, Nate, when you get there, stuff that happened 2 years ago, you're going to start hitting the penalties from right when you're ready to play ball, your sophomore, maybe even your freshman year. That's whenever you could possibly have that bowl ban or some probationary type stuff. And, you know, I'm sure we're definitely using that not only with him, but with Andrew Babalola as well. Huge, huge addition. And it makes that defensive line that much more versatile. What a class that you have, especially I think the little bit of unknown about Jared Smith, you're not 100% sure about how he's going to perform on the field with the game he had on last Thursday. You throw that kind of freaky athletic ability. We got Nate Marshall. Then you got your dudes in the middle, Jordan Crawford, who's a monster, Malik Autry, who's an absolute mountain. And then obviously you got Antonio Coleman and what happens with him. So you got a really, really good all-around defensive line class that can do a little bit of everything. You got to be fired up about that. And I don't think Auburn's slowing down anytime soon. As a matter of fact, this could be the beginning of, you know, this last little run. Auburn could go ahead and get close to finishing this class off here pretty soon. So big, big addition. I didn't get to talk too much in depth on it. I didn't get to talk too much in depth on it Friday because it hadn't technically happened yet, even though we all knew it was going to pop just hours after the show went live, and that's exactly what it did. All right, switching gears, week zero, okay? I think there's some stuff to talk about from this FSU-Georgia Tech game that I think will have a little bit of impact on Auburn as well, and I think it's something to talk about. So, number one, this was the introduction to HelmetCom, okay? Helmet Communications. And I'm going to be honest, my first reaction from that game and looking at who FSU was and who they've become, I'm not a big fan, okay? I'm not a big fan of the huddle, get the play in, give it to everybody, break, and go. Look, FSU is a 65 to 70 play a game team, okay? 2 years prior, they're fast, they're explosive, they get the ball out, they get the play in, they run. This thing slowed down and made their whole offense so clunky and just not really functional. And I know that some of that could just be DJU, that could be that problem, because now that he's back in the ACC, the offense kind of looked a little bit like it did whenever he was at Clemson, just not really able to make that big play. But for whatever reason, you know, Norvell's always been a little bit more tempo guy, throw it around, be explosive. And something about that game, number one, it was loud. That stadium was really loud. So I wonder how you could even hear the comms. I mean, he was definitely having to put his hands over his head and really focus on getting that play in, but then you get the playoff late in the clock. It just didn't seem like they could ever get in any rhythm on offense, and I think that's why I think that's probably going to benefit Auburn a little bit, because we don't run the huddle in our offense. We don't go to huddle. So I don't think the play calling, the way play calling is called, I don't think it's going to affect Auburn's offense at all, because we don't call plays like that. Everybody looks to the sideline. Your different position groups get their signs that are called in all for the same play. I don't see that changing. That's going to help Auburn continue to be able to go tempo. The sound is not going to really affect things. Now, when there's a check, or if there's a coach in the headphones that's saying, hey, we got this play in, it's signaled in, be watching so-and-so, be watching the free safety. You're going to have the matchup here with Cam Coleman. You're going to have this, you're going to have that. I think that is highly beneficial, but the I don't see Auburn really getting in a situation where things get clunky. I don't think the headphone issue, it's going to take a lot of time for people to get used to it, coaches to get used to it, but it definitely seemed, yeah, Haynes King was definitely having issues hearing as well. I've seen some people say that in the chat, but for whatever reason, I felt like my first review from the headphones, I'm not a big fan so far. I'm not a big fan of the helmet comms. It's the way those two teams executed it. Wasn't a big fan. Love the 2 minute warning. I love the 2 minute warning at the end of both halves. I think that's something that you got to get used to, because you got to plan for that extra, technically that extra timeout. I think that's a great addition, getting more and more like this NFL product. So I'm a big fan of that. I think that the helmet comms, I think the 2 minute warning is great. Not 100% sure on the helmet comms. And I really don't think it's going to make a huge difference as far as how the play calling and signaling works for Auburn, but I can see where, from an audible situation or helping Peyton be able to see the field or helping kind of give him a red flag on who to be identifying, who to notice where the matchup is, I can see stuff like that helping. But it's going to be a work in progress, because I thought FSU's offense looked pretty horrid. And that's not typically I know they call it the 2 minute timeout, not the 2 minute warning. I guess there's a trademark on that in the NFL. Switching gears a little bit, but staying on the same topic, FSU. Okay, this is year five of Norvell at FSU. Okay, and last season they took 17 transfers in the portal. Okay, this is a time where they should be building. They should have had this thing built to the point where you have high school class stacking after high school class stacking after high school class, and for whatever reason, we're still year five, we're bringing in more transfers than we've ever brought in before. And I think it just goes to show you that as good as the players you bring in the portal, I think that what Hugh's doing and the basis of building it through the high school is, for a consistency standpoint, is how it's got to be done. The culture aspect is easier to sort of instill and sort of easier to breed when you have your hands on dudes for multiple years. You're bringing guys in at the beginning and cementing your culture, cementing everything that goes along with that, and you can kind of continue to build that. To be this far into it and having to bring in that many dudes in the portal, everybody can get guys in the portal now. Like, everybody can get talent. So the way you stand out, the way you differentiate yourself, is to continue to build high school depth, highly rated high school depth. And I don't understand why this late in the game, Florida State's not starting to wean themselves off of having to use the portal. I think you'll see some of the better teams out there, it's going to be 8 to 12 multiple, 8 to 12 max, as far as bringing in guys from the portal to fill a hole, fill a this, fill a that. But bringing in 17 guys in year five, like, what's going on? What's going on? That's not going to get it. That's not going to get it, because then you're going to have guys like Brent Key, who are big culture guys. Now, he has brought a bunch of guys in the portal, but you're going to have coaches like that. They're going to be able to knock you off because they're going to be able to get players too. So That whole thing, I'm not really sure. I'm happy with how Auburn is working it. Their first year, Hugh brought in like 21 dudes in the portal. This past season, I think they only brought in 15. And I think from that 8 to 12, I think that's going to be kind of ideal. And the closer you can get to that 8 number, I think the better. I think the better it's going to end up being all around the better for chemistry, for just – continuity and competition, everything. You just kind of know who's there. You know how to build around it. And I like the way, again, I like the way Hugh's doing it. Really, really focusing on the high school ranks. So that's my week zero. There was not a lot of week zero talk. There's not a lot of games to really dive into. This was obviously the big one. And then this coming up week is when, it really all kicks off. you know, Auburn final. We finally get to see this Auburn Tiger team that you've heard about, you've heard talking about a lot of the scrimmage talk, the practice talk, spring ball, all this stuff. It's finally coming to an end, and you're going to I just saw a funny comment. And then you're going to kind of put it on the field and see that final product this weekend. So this is a big week. We started transitioning last week into game prep, season prep, and that's what's going to be going on this weekend. You've sort of solidified a lot of your position battles and things like that, and you're going to just be working your way, preparing for Alabama A&M heading into the game. So, like, what is success when you play a game like this? What is success? Had a really good talk on the barn, auburn.com. If you're watching this, if you're in the comments, you guys need to join, try for just a dollar for your first month, see if you like it. But we had a really good conversation on how can we define Saturday as success? Because obviously you're playing a team that's going to be way overmatched. So what does success look like against a team like this? And I think there's a ton of different ways you can answer this question. I'd love to hear some of y'all. So tell me what you think in the comments, and we'll go back through them here in just a little bit. What do you define as success? What would you define as success this weekend? I'll tell you what I think. Okay. And then we'll see what you guys think as well. So number one, I want to see a combined 300 yards passing. Okay. Last year, you could not throw the ball. Last year, you had no weapons. Last year, you could not figure out a way to move the ball down the field vertical. Okay. I feel like Auburn is not going to have a ton of issues moving the ball offensively, but you need to get points on the board quick. And I think you need to throw the ball down the field and put some points up on the board quickly. So I think if Thorne starts the game off and he starts the game off hot, throw a couple of touchdowns, get a big lead in the first half, go maybe a drive or two into the third quarter, then pull him out. And I want to say if Thorne can be somewhere in that 200 plus range by that point in time, and then you, with your backups, you can go over 100 yards passing, get those guys some good experience. I think that's a success. You got to prove, especially once you've brought in this wide receiver class, you got to prove that you can get the ball down the field. And this is a perfect time to really hone in on your passing game. This is a really good time to really tighten up your passing game, stuff that you've had issues with, last season. This is a really good time to show proof of concept. Now, regardless of the opponent, being able to throw the ball down the field, get the ball in a bunch of different players' hands, throw some touchdowns instead of just having a bunch of rushing touchdowns, being able to throw some touchdowns, throw some 50-50 balls. You know, I want to see some 50-50 balls. Whatever you got to do, that's number one to me. That would define a successful outing. Running the ball. I have expressed some concern with Auburn and their running attack. From the practices that I've seen, from the notes that I've gotten from practice, that offensive line, that offensive front getting push and being able to run the ball with being physical in the run game, Auburn's kind of struggle. Seems like they haven't really found their footing yet there, at least now leading into the season. So I want to see some hitting some face masks. I want to see some pushing some folks off the ball. I think you get close to 200 yards rushing in the game with a couple of rushing touchdowns. I want Jarquez to have a big day as well. As he goes, I think this season can go. He had a really good year last year with no passing attack. I want to see him being able to go ahead and punch some balls, get some big chunk yardage, 10, 15 yard carries. I think that's big on defense. I think 10 points or less, you're going to have some fluky plays that are going to end up in some field goals. You may give up a weird play in the return game, whatever. Regardless, I want to see 10 points or less out of the defense. And I want to see that we've been told we're able to get pressure without having to manufacture it. I want to see that. I want to see that front four be able to strangle that quarterback, be able to swarm that quarterback and get him have him moved off his mark, speed up his clock, make him make some bad decisions. I think that's big. Those things, no turnovers, no injuries, 500 yards offense. Let's do 300 passing, 200 rushing, 10 points on defense. Let's maybe create a turnover. I think the score from that point, you know, I think if you take those things, if those things happen, the score part will take care of itself. I think Auburn hopefully can score somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, high 40s, low 50s, something like that, and keep them under 10 points. I think you're happy with week one and how week one plays out. So, again, you got to keep. I'd love to hear. Hey, I'd love the good comment that just came in. If you tell me what you think success would be. Also, hey, tell me what you think a score was going to be. Tell me what you think a good score would be that would make you feel good about. Tell me in the comments. We'll talk through it. But that's pretty much all I got for tonight. And I want to get into the comments. I want to get into the questions and have some fun. Have some fun there. So let me scroll back to the beginning. And really dive into it. Ryan Piercy, the question everybody wants to know. Nate Marshall, boom. When is Deuce making the move C5? Great question, Ryan. He's coming in on a visit this weekend. I honestly don't see it going back. I don't see it going much longer than this weekend. If I had to make a guess, I would say by the end of the day on Sunday, he's probably on the commit list. He's made his flip, but we'll have to see. He could very well do it prior. He could very well do it, you know, before he gets here. He could do it the day of. But I think what he's going to typically do is, I think what they typically do is they come in, they have a good visit, and then they go home, and then that's whenever they have their graphics done. That's whenever they have all their good stuff, and go ahead and you know, make it official. But I don't see, there's nothing that slowed this thing down. There's absolutely nothing that's made me feel any different about the recruitment. I've been locked in on the end of this month since this whole thing started coming out from the intel that I had. I said, don't fall for any of the August the 8th, August the 15th. If it doesn't happen this Friday, then it's good for Notre Dame. I had said, pay no attention to that. It's the end of the month, and it's always been. Look, he felt Notre Dame really brushed him into his commitment, and he's going to take his time and make sure he's done this thing right. He's vetted everything out, and I think it's still it's going to be the Auburn Tigers, and it should be something that happens. I would imagine no later than Sunday. And I tell you what, if it doesn't happen on Sunday, I'm still not worried. There's nothing that's come out that's made me feel that I should be nervous or anything about this, but I do think it happens over the weekend for sure. Chris Baker, best intro ever. I like the intro. I think it's a little bit long, but that I do like the beat. Kind of gets you fired up. Thomas Jones, super chat. Appreciate it, brother. Appreciate the super chat. Definitely love. Definitely helps the game out. So appreciate that big time. Here we go. Johnny Barner. Yes, sir. Johnny Barner, the barn, it just kind of goes together. I dig it. If Auburn lands offer tonight, they will jump from number five. Will they jump from the number five recruiting class to a top three? I think I've done the math, and if those two guys actually, I have not done the math. Taylor Korn, if you're on the barn, auburn.com, we actually have a thread on this, and it's like every possible scenario that could be. I introduced her to the 247 class calculator, and she has taken the bull by the horns, and she is literally, I think there's every single scenario and where it would put Auburn in the standings. This would easily get Auburn. Auburn's right at five right now. I think Deuce may jump Auburn to four. If you were to add Offord, you're going to jump way up into that top three category. And then there's the guys that there's possibilities that Auburn's talking to with, you know, Andrew Babalola, Malachi Goodman, Tyler Lockhart, Naeem Offord, Caleb Cunningham, like these guys that you're still pushing for, you're still pushing for flips. If you start adding some of those in, there is a realistic pathway to a top two class, maybe even the number one class if literally all the cards fall in Auburn's direction. And for that to actually play out, you got to have a good game this weekend, and you got to have a really good start to the season, really, really build that momentum and kind of get that wave pushing over the edge. But yeah, if you get offered tonight, you're definitely going to be in the top three, and you're going to be primed to make a charge for that number one class. Thomas Jones, do your own first and second depth chart on both sides of the ball, in your opinion. Whew, this is kind of tough. So Obviously, we'll start on offense. Peyton Hank, number one, number two. Your first two running backs, Jarquez, and I think it's going to be Austin still, one and two. Cobb sort of interchangeable and with Austin. They kind of have different things. I think your first, if it's a running back that's a every down back off the bench, I think it's Austin. I think Cobb could be your number one third down back that's, you know, pass block, catch balls out of the backfield, 2-minute offense. Wide receivers, it's going to be Cam Coleman, Keandre Lambert-Smith, and Robert Lewis. That's your three guys. After that, Malcolm, there's really no one, two, three, and four like defined spot after that. It just kind of feels like you got Malcolm Simmons in there that's going to get some time. You got Sam Jackson that in certain formations, he's going to be out there first. You're probably your first five or six wide receivers are those three that I mentioned. And then maybe like a Sam Jackson, Malcolm Simmons, let's see that would, and then honestly, maybe even a Bryce Kane, backing up by Samuel Jackson. I could see Perry fitting in there, as well, but that's kind of how I see those six. Tight end, you got Rivaldo as your pass catching guy, Luke Deal as your first H back blocking type guy. The offensive line is where it gets a little tricky. As of now, if I had to guess, and more of this will come clear as the week goes on, I think it's going to end up probably being the same lineup for this first game. Percy Lewis, Dylan Wade, Connor Liu, Jeremiah Wright, and Xavien Miller. They talked about, Hugh said, this past week they flip-flopped the offensive tackles. They're trying to find that right – or not offensive tackles. They flip-flopped Dylan Wade and Percy Lewis, really trying to figure out that correct mix. And then after that, I mean, you got Tyler Johnson that could play both sides. You got Braden Joyner has actually Braden Joyner and Tate Johnson have actually started to really work their way into being right behind, you know, those two guard spots. So Braden Joyner's really gotten better and better and better, and Tate's doing a really good job as well. So offensive line, again, it seems like you got your five, and then there's like three or four other that could kind of go in any of those positions. Defensive line is a little bit trickier. So, you know, Keldrick Fox is going to be one of your starters. You feel like this, the other defensive end is Philip Bleedy. And I'm not 1,000% sure what's going on 100% at defensive tackle. To me, it feels like it's Rakes. And Jason Jones don't really care, don't really know which one of those is better because they're both great. They're both good at what they do. But Bobby Travis, I've been hearing a lot of his name lately. I feel like he had a really good practice last week. Could he be sliding his way up the depth chart? And then Malik Blockton in pass rush situations, he's moved his way up the depth chart. So there's a lot of guys there that can play. There's a lot of guys there that can, you know, go in, and you don't feel like there's a huge drop off. Your two linebackers, Keys and Eugene Asante. I'm interested to see if Keys is ready to go game one or if they hold him out as a precautionary thing. I don't think it's anything super serious. I think he even practiced, you know, at close to full speed this past week, but I wouldn't be surprised if they hold him out. And if they do, I believe the kid from Duke, Dorian Mausi, would come in and be your second guy there. Corner, you got outside, you have Keontae Scott, Kay and Lee. Nickel right now, it really depends on the formation, but it seems like Champ Anthony has kind of carved his little niche there. And then your two safeties, I still think right now you have Jaron Thompson and you have Caleb Wooden. So I think that's your starters. And then, again, defensive back is another one where it's not necessarily you got one guy behind each one of those guys. I think you have three or four guys that could play pretty much anywhere. So who's the first corner off the bench? Right now, probably Antonio Kite. Who's the second one? Probably J.C. Hart. So that's, again, you're talking there's a lot of dudes that can cross play a bunch of different positions. So that's kind of how I see the depth chart rolling. And I'll be anxious to see how those rotations go this weekend, who jumps in as Auburn sort of kind of puts their foot on the gas and hopefully is extending that lead. Let's keep going through these. Does Auburn, Chris Baker, does Auburn have a chance at Zion Grady? Chris, if they want him, they do. I just don't know that with some of the guys, your recent addition of Nate Marshall, you still want to try to push for Herbert Scroggins. I just don't know if there's a fit right now for Zion Grady. Do they have a chance? If they want to make a push for him, they absolutely can get him. If they want him, they can absolutely get him. I just think they have some guys. I think they have some guys a little bit higher up the board. Let's keep going. Derek Anderson, when we get in merch, T-shirts should be in now. So T-shirts, I think they've already actually started to be mailed off to your annual subscribers. We did, if you did the annual subscription to thebarnauburn.com, those went out first. We're working on a lot of different things. We're working on some polos. We're working on some hoodie pullovers, some hats. They should all be coming in the next couple of weeks. And when we do, we're going to drop a link and have a little shop on thebarnauburn.com. So you'll be able to go and purchase the Barn merch. So good question. T-shirts for sale should probably be going up. I would imagine at some point this week, I'll definitely let everybody know when that happens. Lee Carter, VK Dub, proving his doubters wrong. He gets an inordinate amount of hate early in this cycle when you had Antonio Coleman flip, you know, right after he had Antonio Coleman's flip, and then Kalen, I forget his last name. He was another big defensive tackle. Both of those decommitted shortly after Jeremy Garrett left for the NFL. Traction was a little bit slower. You had Zion Grady go to Ohio State, which I don't even know if you're really pushing for at the time. And, you know, there was just some stuff going on, and he got a ton of hate, but he's really turned it on. And I think he could have arguably the best class of it's going to be a dogfight between him and Jake Thornton over who has the best class, because he's definitely putting together a new one. Putting together a really good one. So definitely, Lee, I agree with you. He is silencing the haters. Montez Haynes, are we recruiting the running back out of Auburn High? That's Omar, I believe, Harbison or something like that. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. Montez, absolutely. He is probably going to be your number one target in that class. He is a bigger back. He was unstoppable. I think he had an unbelievable first game last Friday, and he's just, it seems like even in practice and whatever, he's dominant. He's a very lowly rated guy right now. So I think this will be a breakout year, and you'll start to see his ranking and his recruitment skyrocket, but absolutely that he is probably going to be your number one target for that class at running back. Mr. Beautiful, how did Derek Smith do last Thursday? I don't know that I have his stats in yet. I'm working on those. We have a thread on thebarnauburn.com. We call it Friday Night Insights, where we let people I get stats, and we have other people that get stats, and we kind of try to keep everybody in the loop on who's doing what and who's having big games. And actually, the show tomorrow is going to be about a lot of those guys that have big games. But I don't have his stats, but I'll be looking into those. I'm sure he's going to be lighting it up. Also, last week was one of those kind of like week zeros for high school. You had a lot of some like jamboree type games. I'm not 100% sure if those games even really count. So he may not even play last week. But we'll see. We got a line on him, and we should be able to start getting his stats and definitely updating those as time goes on, because he's going to be a stud. Drexel Kirkpatrick, Kilpatrick. I saw the game on TV. Smith could not be blocked very often. He's talking about Jared Smith, had three or four sacks, multiple tackles, 15 tackles, four tackles for loss, and three sacks. Jared Smith was the best player on the field. I mean, from the defensive line position to be able to get those type of numbers, you're a freak. You're a freak, and you're able to get it done. So yeah, he definitely had a very big game. Ryan Piercy talking about FSU. I think that they're trying to play coach around DJU in the FSU game. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he is. I hate talking badly about kids, but it seems like he's never going to be able to live up to that five-star hype. He struggled at Clemson. He was a good game manager last year at Oregon State, and it seemed like, you know, whether it was the headsets, whether it was him, the offense was clunky. They couldn't really get it done. They were never really – it felt like they were a threat to go on a scoring run, like go on a run of multiple drives. It was just – It was just rough to watch. So yeah, I agree. I think they're probably trying to coach around him a little bit. Chris Baker, how about SMU escaping Nevada? They look rough, but righted the ship at the end. You know, those games are tricky, but I really expected that game to be a blowout, and I expected SMU, and they still could. It's game one. I expected them to sort of be a surprise with them newly joining the ACC. So that is not the very first showing. That's not an ACC game, but when you're trying to make a case that you belong, that is not the game you want to start off with. But I think Red will kind of get them going. They moved the ball pretty good. I think they just had some weird stuff happen, but they ended up pulling it out at the end and winning. Hey, you just got to win. You just got to win to keep going. Let's see here. Let's keep going. People correcting me on the 2-minute timeout. Yes. Terry Ogle, Norvell should have taken the Bama job. Hey, hard to argue with that. He might should have, but especially knowing that you got to go to the portal to bring in 17 guys in year five, that doesn't make a ton of sense. Let's see here. You'll never have Reginald Jenkins. You'll never have great, chemistry as long as you have different players every year. Reginald, I couldn't have said it any better. If you're full of one-year guys, if you're full of one-year rentals, one and dones, you're going to have chemistry issues. You're going to have you're just not going to have a very consistent culture doing that. It's just not going to be – it's just impossible. And it's not any knock against the kids. It's just a knock against the system. It's just really hard to have a kid come in and for 1 year and be able to buy fully in the way you need them to buy in. They're kind of coming. They got their check and they want to, you know, they're here for whatever period of time and they're out. It's just really hard. It's really hard to sort of keep that thing going. Poison ice cream. Recruiting is always going to be the lifeblood of any competitive college football program. There's nobody that agrees with you more. Poison ice cream. Great. But terrifying name at the same time than Hugh Freeze. That's his deal. That's who he is. That's what he does. That's what he was known for. That's what I was excited about when he came in. And he's continued to kind of do it. He's continued to show that everybody was sort of right about him and right about as far as what his strengths were. Terry Ogle, again, if you can focus on 8 elite transfers, that would be great. I totally agree. I think that's going to be – that's your barometer. That's where you want to be. 8 – if you can get to the point where you only need 8 guys to come in and plug holes, you're feeling really good about yourself, about your program, 100%. Chris Baxter, great question. Is this week still thud or is it full contact? Okay, this week coming up, you have 2 practices where you're in full pads. This is a game week. You have Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Those are your full practice. Those are your full contact, full pads practices, and they're always the most physical. So there could be – I doubt there's going to be a ton of tackle to the ground, but there's going to be some full contact hitting those days, and those are typically your big hitting days on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. That's how that works. But I don't think there's going to be a ton here on out of tackling to the ground. That's just not smart in the season unless you just got a big problem of tackling and then you just got to get out there and start wrapping up and knocking each other down. So is it full contact? Yes, to an extent. They're going to be popping on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but I don't think anybody's going to be tackling to the ground. Agnes. So pulling for Peyton Thorne to have an incredible game. I feel like he got the short end of the deal last year. Totally agree. Now he wasn't all the way innocent. A lot of that was on him too, but just the combination of factors, it makes it tough for anybody. It makes it tough for anybody to succeed in that system. And I feel like he is so locked in and so, I guess, such an extension of the coaching staff on the field as far as the synergy goes with this offensive system. I think he's got just that in and of itself will make him be better and have hopefully have a little bit of a better year. Let's see. Terry Ogle, the barn is awesome. I think so too, Terry. You guys need to join. Terry's very active on the barn. Check us out, www.thebarnauburn.com for $1 for your first month. A lot of inside information, great conversation and stuff like that that'll lead you, get you fired up for the get you fired up for the game this weekend. The weakest link, I think this is a answer to, you know, what would you expect to be considered a success in the game this weekend. Take care of business with a comfortable lead and get the backup some game reps. Dadgummit, weakest link, you nailed it. You got to get the get a comfortable lead quick, and let's get some young guys in there to make some plays. I want to see Walker White throw a football. I want to see Walker White throw a forward pass this weekend. I want to be up so much that the fourth string quarterback gets time to come in and throw a pass. And I think what's going to be great, what's going to be hilarious is when Malcolm Simmons has two catches for 120 yards in the late in the third quarter because he gets in and, you know, he's going to be explosive and chomping at the bit to go score. War Eagle, Wyoming, 48 point spread is a huge number. I think it's 47.5 is the spread. If you're, you know, if it's 50 to 10, that's still not covering. And that's kind of what I said I wanted to see. So yeah, 48 is a big number. So that's that one's going to be tough. That one's going to be tough to cover. I'd probably favor Alabama A&M on that one, but they are a very undermanned team. So who knows? Who knows what could happen? Ryan Piercy, any updates from the scrimmage yesterday? Absolutely. If you're a member of the barn, we did a full breakdown of the practice yesterday. It was very light. It was not super physical. I think they've sort of developed the scout team now, and it was a lot of like game week prep where it was a scrimmage, but it was scout team versus the ones, I think, on both sides of the ball. Keandre Lambert-Smith seems like he's back almost 100%. I think he really shredded the defense. He's a chain getter. He's a first down getter. If it's third down, Robert Lewis and Keandre Lambert-Smith find the sticks, and they're able to move the chains. And then DeMarcus Riddick, I don't stop hearing about this kid and all the things they're doing with him. I think he had a big scrimmage. They were putting him a little bit all over the place. So again, not super duper in detail, other than Peyton had a really good day. Hank had another really good day. The receivers did really well, and it was just not one of those like really bang bang physical scrimmages. And it was ones on the scout team. I think the scout team's kind of ironed out for the year there. Echoing that, Agnes heard that at the scrimmage, Peyton Thorne was totally in charge. Yes, that's hearing the same things. Same things to that. Also, kind of came out injury free. We're a little dinged up. There's some guys that got some aches and pains, which is totally normal. But for the most part, you've kind of got out of this fall camp, and it is fall camp. Somebody got on me saying it was called summer camp. I'm like, no, summer camps when you go like go camping or go to the you know whatever band camp or something like that. That's summer camp. Fall camp for the beginning of football is the practices before the season starts. That's always been fall camp. From the beginning of time. Let's see. Ryan Piercy, have they got the left tackle position sorted out yet? I don't think so. I think it's going to be a work in progress, but I do think, and I could be wrong, and if I am, that's fine, but I think it's going to end up being starting off the year with Percy at left tackle, and then they'll kind of see how it goes from there. But there are rotational things they're trying out. So if it does become an issue, they got something quick they can go to the fly on. Hey, worst case scenario, Dylan Wade's out there at left tackle, and he was phenomenal there last year. Let's see. Let's keep going. Yeah, War Eagle, Wyoming. After the way Quez stumbled into last season with a missed time in the first few games, I want to see him come out strong. 15 carries for 150 yards. Yes, exactly. He was suspended for a couple of games to begin the year. It'll be good to see him, you know, go ahead, come in, and ready to go. I agree. I want to see Quez really, really go in. start having a big year right off the bat. Some scores, Drexel Kirkpatrick, 49-10. Honestly, that's kind of the number I got in my mind, maybe like a 55-10. Here's another 49-10 from Connie for AU. Drake Barefoot, 63-6. I love it. I love it. War Eagle, Wyoming, 42-10. Not bad. Not bad. I hope we score a little bit more than that. The Skeptical Christian, 52-6. I like that number. You got another 52-7. I like it. I like it. Mr. Beautiful, had one from him tonight. Hopefully we get Deuce, Offered, Cunningham, and Babalola. Mr. Beautiful, that list right there is beautiful. And I mean, again, I think the first two on that list, Deuce and Offered, are a very, very realistic get. Cunningham's probably the longest shot on that list. And then Babalola, I think Auburn is going to fight to the end. And I think he's probably got an announcement coming up pretty soon. Still doesn't have an official date. I think Auburn's held him off from gotten him to hold off on committing a few times. But I think they stand a really good chance of landing him. So it'd be awesome to get a five-star quarterback, corner, an offensive tackle, and then Cunningham. Who knows, once Deuce pops and this offense starts to hopefully explode a little bit, they're not going to give up on him. And you've seen nobody is off the table. Doesn't matter where they're committed. Nobody's off the table with this staff. Going to look at just a couple more, and then I think we're going to call it a night. Let's see. It's a lot of conversation. I kind of dig it. Everybody kind of talking back and forth. Drexel, Cal will be the best test early. Yeah, I agree. That's going to be where you're going to really know. You won't be able to tell a ton. Won't be able to tell a ton from this one, but I can see once that happens, once that Cal game happens, you'll really know where they stand. This is a good question. Scotty King, you think Hugh Freeze shows a lot or as little as possible? So from a schematic standpoint, I don't think you're going to see anything like overly complicated, but I think he's going to air the ball out. So it depends on what you think, what you call a little, what is showing. We're going to throw the ball. They're going to throw